Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to the Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. Tonight we will be talking about the Black Superwoman, and that is our topic. And it's a conversation about expectations of our Black women and how we take on many roles. But before we get into the show tonight, I just wanted to say I'm happy to be up and alive and well during this pandemic, and I am hoping that our viewers and listeners tonight are also doing well and surviving this pandemic. I want to just give a quick shout out to Dr. Floyd Harris Jr., for creating the Black Lives Matter as a platform, and for also allowing us, others, to use it. In just one second, more technical difficulties. So I'll be having a couple of callers join us in just a few minutes. Eileen Reed will be helping me host the show tonight, and I am really hoping for some of our callers to call in and just give their perspective, their viewpoint on tonight's topic. So first off, I just wanted to start with what is the Black Superwoman syndrome, and where did it start? So I went to the National Institute of Health to find some answers. I know that as a Black woman, I have experienced the Black Superwoman syndrome. And I know quite a few of my friends that have also experienced that. And usually, to me, in my point of view, it's that expectation that we can do everything. We can keep the house. We can work. We can be there for family and our children. And we don't skip a beat. We're not supposed to get tired. We're not supposed to feel. And we're not supposed to get angry. So, or really be almost void of emotion when it comes to difficult or complicated matters. And oftentimes the Superwoman syndrome is also looked at as the angry Black woman. So starting just with the angry Black woman, it's a stereotype that portrays Black women as sassy, ill-mannered, ill-tempered by nature. And we know that for the most part, it's not true. So I have my co-host tonight that has dialed in, and so I'm going to bring her in on the show, Miss Eileen Reed, always out there in the community, always looking out for the best interests of the people and also justice, and I'm just really happy that she hosts the show with me on Tuesday night. So call her 572.
Hey, how's everybody tonight? This is a wonderful opportunity to talk about the Superwoman syndrome because, number one, Mother's Day is coming up. So for all of us who are mothers, pseudo-mothers, wannabe mothers, aunties, grandmas, all of that, this is a really important time, but a real important subject. And I'm real excited to do the show with you. So thank you for that intro, Sister Maria.
Okay, yes, no problem. I'm trying to get us back on, get back on Facebook Live. I am still trying to master doing four or five things at one time. The Black Lives Matter show's founder, Dr. Floyd Harris, he makes it look really easy juggling different things.
He does. But don't be hard on yourself, because I've run the board. And it's not easy, but see, I've never done the live stream that you are doing. So I take my hat off to you, sister. And I think you're doing a wonderful job. I really do.
Thank you. So what comes to mind when you think about the Black Superwoman?
You know, I was thinking about the conversation we had about the show, and one of the things that comes to mind for me is a quote I heard, I read in Essence magazine about 20, 25 years ago. And this sister was talking about the difficulty that she had in life with her job and her children and her family. And one line really struck me. She said, if I fall, I have to fall forward. I cannot fall backwards because there's nobody to catch me. So she was the breadwinner in her family, the main breadwinner. She didn't come from a privileged background. She was one of the first in her family to complete college and get what we like to call a good job, quote unquote. And so I had a flood of emotions when I read that. And I wonder if anybody listening has felt that way. But that's what came to mind with the Superwoman image, that we're supposed to be all things to all people in our lives. And that's, you know, damn near impossible. Mm.
You know, that does seem pretty much impossible. Somehow that super Black woman, or sometimes referred to as the angry Black woman, it has existed for quite a while, you know.
Yes.
It can even be traced back to slavery, the slavery era, you know, where the Black woman was doing everything. You know, she was keeping the family together because families were split, and that's where we extended, you know, relative, that where one person is everybody's aunt, because it would often be the Black woman that had to not only nurse all the children on the plantation, but also keep other children when the moms got taken or the dads were taken. And she
was
the overseer, so she had to deal with people suffering from trauma, emotional trauma from being split up, the abuse that was taken, soothing them and often nursing them back to health. So
that's
it really
goes
far back, what the Black woman
had to
take on.
That's true, sister. And not to mention that she was at the sexual behest of whatever white man or woman, I'm assuming, I don't know, that was on that plantation.
Right.
I mean, you know, for the white people, it was a sexual buffet. But for the women, everything you describe, yes, plus sexual abuse. So that's a lot to contend with. That's the kind of stuff that gets in your DNA and doesn't leave. So, and somehow, you know, sisters have been able to pretty much keep it together, but at what cost? You know, our health suffers, our emotional and physical health suffers. I remember reading an article one time where this was a middle-aged sister. I think she was in her late 40s, early 50s. She had breast cancer. And she did not want to go to the doctor. She just kept working. And when she finally went to the doctor, the nurse that was taking care of her said that her breast was so cancerous, it looked as though it had been turned inside out.
Wow.
That's a hell of an image, because this sister did not want to stop working and did not want to put a financial burden on her family. Her breast looked like it was turned inside out. That's how bad it was.
And so we know that, you know, a lot of times we're not able to get to a doctor for a number of reasons, but it seems to be with Black women and women of color in general, to me, that we often put off going to the doctor, sometimes because we don't have the health insurance, but a lot of times it's because we are not wanting to miss that day of work. With COVID-19, you know, it's exposed that a lot of people go to work sick when they really shouldn't.
Yes.
But
say that.
I think it's almost out of this expectation that, you know, I have to go in, I have to work, they need me, people cannot get along. But do we stop and say, well, how am I going to take care of myself so I can stay around longer, you know, for the people in my life that I care about and that I want to see, you know, healthy and taken care of. So we talk about self-care, and it's almost like a cliche, you know, self-care now. Yes, it's something so easy to say to do, but are we really doing it, you know? I went to Stacy. I'm not sure. Cheryl Sumler and Janice Sumler invited me out, but talk to Tasha. I'm sorry, talk to Tasha. And what they were saying is self care isn't always going to get a manicure or a pedicure. You know? Because if it's always that, then how do we relate in a time like this when we don't have places open that or spas open? So that puts a whole nother spin on self care, and we're talking about it starts with that. So what does self care look like in the house? What does self care look like during a pandemic? You know, and it makes it more difficult.
Right. You know, last week we were Sister Sandra was on, and, you know, I was talking about how it's important to pray and meditate, and she was saying, well, that's a given. And I started to contradict her, but I wanted to be mindful and respectful, because sometimes it's not always a given. Sometimes we think we're too busy to pray. We're too busy to meditate and take 20 or 30 minutes to just be by ourselves, you know, and take a mini vacation, or even to take a nap. What I worry about, Sister Maria, is what are we teaching the children who are watching us? Are we supposed to work until we drop because we're exhausted? Or are we supposed to set a good example for them? In addition to making sure that they have a good work ethic. And I think that's part of the conundrum as well, that part of the stereotype is lazy Black people. And to be quite honest, I don't know too many lazy Black people. You know,
I
know Black people
that
got different, they have different kind of health.
I know it's hard to get them out
for
certain things, but not lazy,
I agree.
So I just want to, from a medical standpoint, read a little bit read the abstract of some research that was done on the Superwoman schema. It was released by the National Institute of Health, and it's titled Superwoman Schema, African Americans, Women's Views on Stress, Strength, and Health. So I don't want this Black Superwoman syndrome to be just something that we're, we already know about that. You know, yes, we know that Black women are expected to do exceptional things, and we do exceptional things at exceptional places. But I wanted to just highlight some of the stress and health strains that it poses on us. And I know if we have already been required or felt like it was our obligation to be a superwoman before this pandemic, then I can only imagine how much more stress would be filled to keep the family together, to keep the family healthy during this pandemic. So I'm just going to read the abstract. Researchers have suggested that health disparities in African American women, including adverse birth outcomes, lupus, obesity, and untreated depression, can be explained by stress and coping. The strong Black woman, superwoman role has been highlighted as a phenomenon influencing African American women's experiences and reports of stress. The purpose of this study was to develop a preliminary conceptual framework for superwoman schema by exploring women's descriptions of the superwoman role, perceptions of contextual factors, benefits and liabilities, and beliefs in how it influences our health. Analysis of 8 focus group discussions with demographically diverse African-American women yielded themes characterizing the superwoman role and personal or socio-historical contextual factors, like what we talked about with slavery and the role of the Black woman. Participants reported that the superwoman role had benefits like preservation of self and family or community, and liabilities, which is the relationship strain, stress-related health behaviors, and stress embodiment. So we're just holding that stress in under this superwoman syndrome. The superwoman syndrome framework might be used to enhance future research on stress in African American women's health. So that's just one study.
That's amazing. That's amazing, amazing, Sister Maria. When you were reading the part about health outcomes, and it made me think of two very famous women who have, you know, money and influence and happen to be athletes, Serena Williams and Allison Fox, the track star. Both of them had difficult pregnancies at the end and very, you know, scary, almost near-death experiences. Now, these are women who have the best health care that money could buy. So why is it that they're still having, you know, the same deal medically that any of the rest of us could have? So I think it's important, this subject that you brought up about the superwoman syndrome, for Black women to be aware of this and to be mindful that maybe there are things that they can do to reduce the problems with it.
Okay, thank you for that, because we definitely want to dive in more into these health factors, and we also want to get stories. We want to hear you guys' stories, because one thing that these studies have found that I went through today is that oftentimes Black women are silent. We're silent about going through. We're silent about the real stress and strain. We'll often play like there's not as much going on as is going on. And what that does when we're silent and when we're not getting our story out, it's not allowing us to heal. It's bottling up that stress, and it's not allowing us to heal. So we have another caller, and I just want to see if they're listening or if they would like to join in the conversation. The last four numbers of the caller's phone number is 3413. Caller 3413, are you there? Caller 3413?
I was hoping they want to share, but maybe they're just listening.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine if they're just listening. I do have some people that are viewing the live stream and also listening via Facebook, because I know that calling in is not usually how people want to, you know, interact unless they're calling I personally. So please feel free to just call in and listen also.
I have a question for you, Sister Maria. And I'm asking you this question because you're the mom of two young girls, you know.
Yeah.
And when you think about this Black Superwoman syndrome, do you put it in context about your daughters? Because I know all parents want better for their children than, you know, what they've gone through, our parents and our grandparents and all that. I get that. But when you were researching this, did you think about the effect that it might have or could have on your daughters?
Yes, I do. And it made me confront some of my own biases. You know, we always want our Black girls, because we've had to be so strong as Black women, we oftentimes want our young Black girls to be strong, so we raise them to be independent. We raise them to, you know, you don't need a man, which, you know, I'm not saying that you necessarily have to have a man to fulfill your life, but it's in the sense of taking care of yourself.
I
you don't need a man,
yes.
you have to be strong, and but we kind of coddle our boys.
Yes.
We're like, you know, hey, you know, you're going to come into a
lot.
We know how they Black young youth and men are targeted by law enforcement, and just racism, the systemic roots of racism in general, and stereotypes.
Right.
So it's like we want to give the boys, our boys, this affection because we feel like they're going to get tossed out into the world and they're going to be, you know, gunning for my boy. You know, sometimes literally gunning for your boy. Where you feel like your girls, they're more vulnerable to types of abuses. So you want to make them cool. So it's almost like I've given my boys more affection, whereas my girls, I've more instilled in them about strength and, you know, protecting themselves and being independent, when it really should be a balance taught to both our boys and our girls, you know.
I hear you. I hear you. And I think a lot of parents have done the same thing. I know that my mom did that with my sisters and I. So it's not just you, and I have five nephews, and they were pretty spoiled by all the women in my family. So I feel you. I can agree with you on the approach that many Black families have, and it's difficult because the world is changing, and I don't know if the expectations are changing, but I know that our viewpoints are going to have to change about the way we raise our Black boys and our Black girls.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Sadly, the racial, we're still being disproportionately targeted by police, and that is both men and women now. I'm thinking Sandra Bland and things like that, but I don't want to get off topic. But I hear you. I appreciate you answering my question, because we didn't have any girls in my family when my nephews were coming up, so I didn't really understand the perception. So I appreciate you sharing your viewpoint on that.
Right, and I don't want them to think that you are supposed to push yourself to the point where you're, you know, breaking down mentally and emotionally. You know, I'm definitely not perfect. I definitely make mistakes as a parent, and you know, sometimes I have let things build up where I have broken down, and my kids have been there, you know, to witness that. And so it's sometimes almost some shame, you know, attached to that, because it's like, I don't want them to, you know, see me weak. But is that really
sometimes,
weak?
I don't think it is, though, Sister Maria. I mean, I was raised by very, you know, strict parents. Many of us, I'm quite a bit older than you, almost twice your age. And so I think it's different for me in my era. My parents were law, whatever they said went. You could not question them, and they were like giants, right? So we never saw them. I never saw my parents cry. I saw them fight and argue, but I never saw them cry and show that soft side of emotion. Now, my mom, there were hugs and giggles and, you know, tickles and all that kind of stuff. But from my dad, no. But from my mom, it was always, listen, you fall down, you get up. Don't cry too much. You know, be tough. You know, your job is to go to school. So I think it's wonderful that your children see the human side to being a parent. Parents are not supposed to be robots. They're supposed to be human. So I think that's a good thing.
Right. And, you know, they showed that stress hormones are contained in tears. You know, so when you cry because you're upset, when you cry because you're depressed, you're actually releasing stress hormones that come out in your tears. It can be easy to have a good cry. You know, yes.
I did not know that.
I'm not a doctor. You know, I look up the information. I definitely make sure I'm finding credible sources.
I know.
And
that's
and
true,
I let you know it's just my opinion.
Yes, that's true, folks. I mean, for all of you who've been listening to the show in the past, Sister Maria does her research, and I have learned a lot from her over the years that I've known her. So, wow, this subject is just the mind reels, you know, and makes us wonder, like, okay, so if we have this superwoman syndrome, where does that leave the men in our life? I mean, where does the strong black man come in? And I know he's there, and there are a lot of good black men in the world. So,
yes. So we will definitely talk about the role of the black man and how do you support these superwomen, so-called superwomen.
Oh,
I don't even want to like put that extra pressure on women to feel like they have to be superwomen, but I do want to explore because this is a real condition and this really affects us. So I pulled up another article, and this is the Strong Black Woman and Black Superwoman Syndrome by I hope I'm not saying her name right, Joella Bea Uzuri. She wrote this article in 2019, and it's mymahoganyproject.org. But I put the link on the show, so if you're watching live stream, you can visit the link.
That's great.
And this, to me, just breaks down the characteristics of the black woman, the super black woman syndrome. I am tired, but not the simple sleepiness that can be solved by a little nap. No, this exhaustion was beyond the physical. As I talked to some of my close friends, all black women, we all seem to convey this mutual shared fatigue. Oddly enough, we never talked about slowing down or taking breaks or dialing our life back a few. On the contrary, we actually talked about how we were going to beat the exhaustion by doing different tasks, jobs, and activities. So even as black women are about the syndrome and the fatigue, they're talking about battling it by putting more tasks on themselves. So it goes on to say, black women and the feeling of being able to do it all and be it all, almost to superhuman levels, withstanding all feelings of fatigue and exhaustion. Most black women can attest to this feeling and the urge to do more and take on more. This is known by many as a strong black woman, and more recently as the superwoman syndrome, super black woman syndrome. The black woman syndrome is different for every black woman, but it is the universal feeling like you have to take on the world and all of its problems while juggling your blackness and womanhood and a multitude of other roles. Being a black superwoman, your world is about doing more, taking on more. Feelings of exhaustion, depression, and fatigue are skirted to the side as we prove that we can defy any and all expectations. Wow. The Black Superwoman syndrome has been romanticized over the years and has been seen as a badge of honor that Black women wear as they tackle daily life. But the reality, though, is far more serious and not as honorable.
Wow.
No one truly knows where the Black Woman Super Syndrome was birthed, although it could be traced back to slavery times. As white, cis, hetero, patriarchal, and imperialism tore African families apart and forced them into slavery, Black women were forced to become the head of the household. And this is where we're going to talk about where men come in and why we had to take that role as head of the household. In many families, having to be the parent, the primary provider, and the one keeping the family unit together. Even as slavery ended, the societal attack on African Americans, many African American men were left with deep emotional, physical, and mental scars and wounds that left many women forced to not only continue to be the rock of the family, but also an anchor, support, and nurturer for the adult black man. I'm going to say that again. Also had to become the anchor, the support, and nurturer for the adult black man. Generations of black women were forced to step up regardless of their own emotional, physical, and mental scars. And in this present day, unfortunately, black women are still being pushed into the role of African Americans as mother, lover, wife, and black freedom fighter and activist, among many other roles. So I just felt this author of this article was right on. She hit on everything that either I've seen in my own life and have definitely seen in this other women's lives, from the effect that it has on women to have to take that role, still dealing with the trauma of the black man, because we know that during slavery he was broken. You know, he was whipped until he was broken. He was abused until he was broken. He was worked until he was broken. And it often the black women had to watch, which to me, in my opinion, built, sowed a seed of resentment in the black women for the black man.
True.
That was
deeply
rooted in his, that has deep historical roots.
I agree, sister. And you know, when you were reading that article, when you read that part twice about being anchor and support, you know, it brought to mind to me about also parenting, because sometimes sisters are put in the role, even though she's an adult and her man is an adult, she's like a parent, because he, for whatever reason, has arrested development, you know, and maybe they both do. But if it comes down to it, she's the one doing the parenting role, and he's the one that is being parented. I'm not saying that it's taken or anything, that whatever she says sticks, but she takes that responsibility. She's going to monitor how much he drinks. She's going to see how late he's been out, you know, how much money, you know, he spent on X, Y, or Z, that type of thing. So so I understand about the resentment you're talking about, and it's true, because, you know, you want to have two adults in a relationship, not just one, and definitely not a parent. That's a way to build up resentment. So, wow, that's some heavy stuff you just read. I'm still processing.
I know when I was going over information for the show today, I was just being blown away because I was just like, we do bottle all of this up. We don't, we know it exists, but we don't really put a name to it, or we don't really recognize it as a medical type of condition that deals with anxiety, depression, stress, which we know can lead to different types of illnesses and diseases.
Right. Absolutely. Stroke,
so
high blood pressure, heart disease.
You know, how
exactly.
Where is our doctor to help us with our Black Superwoman syndrome? What is the remedy?
This is part of the issue. We try to self-medicate, many of us. You know, many of us overeat. You know, we're addicted to shopping or drinking or street drugs. I mean, it could be anything. Addiction is one of those silent type things that anything can be an addiction. Anything. So, wow. I think sisters just try to go along to get along. It's like, okay, well, I'll make myself feel better. I'll just stop over here and buy a little something. You know, it's on sale. You know, it's not going to cost me too much. I'm just going to go ahead and it makes her feel better. And then she's on to the next thing that she has to do.
Yes.
Mm.
But it is definitely, along with all the other things that that Black women go through, and I'm focusing on Black women. I know that women in general, we suffer from disparities, but this is Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show, and so most of the time, a high percentage of the time, we're going to put the microscope in and elevate the needs, concerns of Black people, because we are often dismissed, ignored, and we have to speak louder, and we have to speak more, and we have to focus on what we can do amongst our own, whether it's mixed race or Black. So I don't want to dismiss that other women suffer from extra expectations and definitely disproportionate expectations. But in line with the show, in line with Black Lives Mattering, I'm putting the focus on Black women and the Black
Superwoman syndrome. I'm glad you said that, Sister Maria, because people have to understand that even the medical community did not look on Black women as subject matter to study. I mean, for the longest time, it was only white males that were studied, you know, that they did medical research on to find out about different diseases. And so when you start talking about the food chain, sisters are way down at the bottom on that. So I appreciate you pointing that out to the listeners. That's very important, but it's sometimes it has to be about us before anybody else.
Right. So we talked a little bit about some of those characteristics that make up this Black Superwoman syndrome, that feeling of being tired and fatigued, but not something that can be remedied by a quick nap. You know, this is a deep-seated tired. This is I have to go on day after day with my grief. I have to go on day after day with my pain. I have to go on day after day with my anxiety. I have to go on day after day with whatever type of racism or discrimination that I'm facing as a Black woman. And if I get upset and angry and I start speaking out, then I'm going to be shunned and put in another stereotypical category of the angry Black woman, when this is telling us that we need to be saying enough. No. Janet Capella, you know, I talked to her from time to time, and you know, one day I just wasn't feeling too good, and it was kind of down. And so as we talked about why I was feeling this way, a lot of it just came from me not saying no. And I had enough to do. And so she reminded me that no was a complete sentence.
Whoa.
So I don't have to explain and go more in depth and make a complete sentence out of no. No by itself is a complete sentence, just as well as yes. So
whoa.
I had to practice using no as my complete sentence. Didn't have to have no because. You know,
right. With a, yeah. I like that. No,
once,
it's a complete sentence.
Say it more than once, but the sentence is no.
I like that.
No, I can't do it.
I really like that. That is awesome because I know a lot of us women are socialized to just say, okay, well, let me see what I can do, or okay, I can do it. I like that.
And then we feel horrible if we fall short of doing it when we know initially that we didn't have the time anyway, you know.
Yes.
The capacity to do it, just the mental capacity or emotional capacity to get it done.
That's true. And sister, what is it that makes us not want to ask for help when we know women who might be willing to help us? You know, and
well,
I say
well,
that,
and,
I'm, yeah.
In one of the studies that I was reading, it said that when we ask for help or if we go out and seek help, that we feel that we will be looked at as weak. And the whole part of the Black Superwoman syndrome is to appear, even in our weakness,
appear.
That we are not weak. So that is why we won't ask for help. That is why we won't share some of our pains and sorrows and burdens, because unfortunately, I would have just as easy as saying, well, you know, just stop carrying all of that and start talking to people and letting them know what you need. But this Black Superwoman syndrome is not only something that we suffer from, but it's a stereotype that is ingrained in others.
Right.
It's ingrained that superwoman in to our Black
this
men. They let us as we're the superwoman. We can bounce back from every couple of the times. Not saying I'm talking just in general. I'm not talking
specific. Yes.
So this is just in general. We
and
know
sometimes that is very detrimental.
Definitely, you know, don't care.
well,
everybody is looking for us to be that superwoman, and it's ingrained in them that we are that superwoman. So we can't, it is very vulnerable to go out and say, I'm not handling this well. You know, I'm depressed. I can't even focus on getting my work done or getting or getting tasks completed because I just have so much that I'm taking on. Because
well,
the reality is people do expect us to take that.
Historically, sister, well, this is just my opinion, everybody. So listeners, this is my opinion. But historically, it puts me in mind of the fact that white women or, you know, white women, European, Caucasian women were looked at to be protected, put on a pedestal, you know, shelter. Black women were not thought of that way. We were mules. You know, it was like, well, how much can I load up on her before she's going to just sit down in the road and not, you know, not move? So the whole historical approach to our womanhood has been different. And we have dealt with that. We've gone on with that. But, you know, enough is enough. And I think that's one of the reasons why when I was in college in the late 70s, I wasn't buying into this whole feminist movement because I thought, okay, they're talking about white women. Feminist. They're not talking about sisters who are already doing everything.
Yes.
So we were superwomen even back then. And so, you know, I just think the whole stereotypical approach to Black womanhood versus white womanhood is interesting and set up the framework for the Black Superwoman syndrome.
Okay, I have another caller. I'm going to see if they want to call in to speak. Share your story if you have a poem, if you have something uplifting to help us deal with some of these emotions that we keep silent. Please call in, share that tonight. We'll make time for you to do that. Let me see if this caller would like to speak or just listen. Caller 0456.
Hi, Maria. It's me. It's Sandra D. Cheney.
Hey, welcome back.
Hey. How are you?
Good.
Well, this topic is very, very interesting. I won't, say the name of my organization, but you do know who I work for. I am the only African American. I'm going to say Black. I'm not even going to use African American. Yeah. I am the only Black person in my office, and my presence is strong. I don't even have to speak, and my presence is strong. And it's not strong because I'm speaking. My presence is strong by the way I carry myself. My presence is strong because I'm confident. My presence is strong because I show, when I come in, I show that my sleeves are rolled up and I'm ready to dive in there and put out any fire. So my presence itself speaks volume. And I have my days where I will let my colleagues who are white and Hispanic, I will let my colleagues do something first. I will let my colleagues do second, third, fourth, fifth. And all the while I'm saying to myself, man, if I did that, I would never get away with it, because I am a Black woman. So I sometimes challenge the system. Now, when I say the system, I'm not talking about an SOP, a standing operation procedure. I'm not talking about the employee handbook. I'm talking about the system. Okay?
We know what
the system is. So they would do something, and then I would do it. And it's like, call me, Sandy, why did you do that? And I'm like, I'm sorry. I thought it was okay to do it because, so she did it, he did it. Well, it's not okay. I said, is it not okay because I did it, or is it not okay, period? And I stand up to that. I challenge the system. Now, I'm not insubordinate to the standing operation procedure. I'm not insubordinate to what's in the employee handbook.
Mm-hmm.
I am here to be insubordinate to the system that's in place.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear my colleagues and see them highly upset about something that happened. They'll scream, throw things, slam doors or whatever. But now I'm upset about something. Oh, you're angry. And like you said, you're being an angry Black woman. You're being this. I'm like, whoa. I said, we all have emotions. I said, the other day, just last week, you were upset at something that didn't go right. And you were very upset. It was very visible. What do you call that? What was that? What was that emotion that you were demonstrating that day? Because whatever that emotion was, that's where I am now. And guess what? Mm-hmm. You're not Black. So what was that called when you do it? Because it's not that it's a Black thing. It's it's an emotional. We all go there. And I don't like that when people say, she's a strong Black woman. No one ever puts the word strong in front of a white woman. Oh, she's a strong white woman.
Right.
They would say,
right.
Oh, he's a leader.
Never.
He's a leader.
That's right.
No one ever put the word strong. So I don't like the word strong in front of describing me as a Black woman because it could be condescending in itself. Even if you have a mate, even if you're married in your own household, and you do have a confident, you're very confident, you're very, how should I say, qualified, you're very skilled, you're educated.
Mm.
You're just like any other person that carries a degree or master's or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, people want to use the word, and I'm sorry if people are like, well, what is she talking about? that word strong black woman, I think that's, you know, to me that's
a stereotype.
That could be condescending.
Why do we
always have to be, oh, she's a strong black woman? No. Why can't we be an educated woman? Why can't we be a leader? Mm-hmm. Why can't we be a mover
right.
and shaker? You know, why can't we be a stakeholder? You know, why can't we be, how should I say, very maternal for our kids and our young family members? You know, why, mm-hmm. you know, why say, oh, she's a strong black woman? That is a stereotype. I don't like that. You know, when people describe me, don't describe me as a strong black woman. You describe me as I am. I see strong as in strength, as in muscles, as in weight. You know, that,
yes.
use it for that. Use it
yes.
for that.
Sister, you throw on a mouth though when you don't cater to the stereotype that's in their head. Because that's their expectation, and you are not doing their expectation, so you are, you know, a disruptor for
you
them,
know,
and that's
but,
wonderful.
But I tell you this. I've been with my company for 13 years, and Maria, you know who I work with for.
Yes.
And the president emeritus, who's been with the same company for over 50 years, about 55, 56 years, you know, he came to me and he said, "You are the longest, or you have been in that desk longer than anyone in that position."
Mm.
He said, "You have been there the longest." And to me, that is the highest compliment. You know, everyone else, he said, "Oh, they've been there a year, they've been in a year and a half, they can't
mm-hmm.
cut it." And he said, "You okay. have something that the others, you know, couldn't pay for, couldn't pay
right.
to have." And he said to me, "You have likability.
Hmm.
People like you." And to me, that was the best compliment ever. Because in my business, I have to raise funds. I have to go out there and ask for money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't come
That's
off a as a strong black woman, you know, give me the money or whatever. I come off
yeah.
as an intelligent. I come off as a mover and shaker, a leader, confident, you know, and in the business I work with, I have to raise $4.1 million, well, $4.3 now, you know, a year. And that's not easy. And if I was an angry, black, strong woman like some people try to, how should I say,
stereotype.
Me,
yes. mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be where I am, you know. So I don't like that word. I don't like that stereotype when someone say, oh, you know, you're a strong black woman. Or even when I show confidence, someone called me cocky one day. Oh, you're being cocky.
Yeah.
I said, am I confident or am I cocky? Which one is it? And I said, you know, I work in groups. I work in projects. I sit on boards. I sit on committees. And if they're trying to delegate a task to someone, and if someone says, you know what, I'll take that. I'll take on that task.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? To me, that's confident. That's a positive yeah. response. You know,
sure.
but if I say, you know what, I'll do it. I can do it. I can handle that job. Don't look at me and say I'm cocky. You know, I want to do that job because I'm qualified to handle that task. I'm qualified to handle that task. And the thing about it is, in my 10th year with that company, no one has ever seen me roll my eyes, which is stereotype. Roll my neck while I'm talking with my fingers pointing. They have never seen me do that. And you know what? They won't see it happen. They'll never see it happen. If I have something to say to someone, I will approach them one-on-one, but I approach them in a comical way. You know, I'm very
Sister
comical.
Sandra,
that's why
this is Aline. Can I ask you a question? When
sure.
you come into when you come into work, and I'm not trying to be one way or another,
no,
but
come on.
I know
no, it's okay.
Okay, okay. When you're coming into work, before you leave your house, you're getting in your car, you're going to work. Do you feel like you're suiting up in armor to go there?
Honey,
do you
I
feel
set up an armor for the world, not
up?
Just for work. I set up an armor. Period. I pray every morning, but it's not just for my job. It's before
mm-hmm.
I get up, before my
Mm-hmm.
Before my feet hit the floor, I you know, and I wouldn't mm-hmm. want to work with an to be honest with you, I wouldn't want to work for an organization where I have to put on a full, I mean, I would not want to work for an organization if I have to do that. So that doesn't even cross my mind, to be honest with you.
But that's good because a lot of us have had to do it.
No, I don't. But there are days when there could be tension because it's of an unfinished business or unfinished comment or unfinished incident that happened the night before or the day before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can prepare myself in prayer for that, but I don't go in with a dog with my tail, you know, between my legs. No. When I go in,
I mean putting on your suit of armor. Yeah.
I probably went too far by, you know, giving that analogy. But no, I don't like, oh my gosh, let me pray before I go there. Oh. But what I do is I pray for the organization as a whole. I pray for them. I'm good. You know, I'm like, let me pray for them. Whatever they're going through, whatever someone they have in their heart, whatever negativity vomit or whatever they got going on that's unbeknownst to me, I pray for them. But I also pray to God to give me the word, speak through me, you know, to whatever they're going through. But no, as far as me, like, oh, I'm here
that's
another
cool.
day. No, I don't feel like that.
Yeah.
But
that's great.
But I do, like I said, before you ask your question, before I approach someone, especially when there's tension there, they probably expect me to come off strong with my neck rolling, my eyes, and excuse me, I want to talk to you. No, I don't approach that way. I'm going to tell you how I approach. And Maria can vouch for this. I'll say, hey, boo, what's up with you? Come here, let's talk. Now, and guess what they all call me in the office? Honey, baby, boo, or sweetie. Because that's me. That's my personality. They'll walk in my office, hey, boo. Even the president, the vice president, the president emeritus calls me Sunshine. Hey, Sunshine, can I talk to you for a minute? So they know that I'm a kind-hearted person.
Right.
But sometimes some of them tap into that system. When I get upset, they tap in that system. And I have to remind them, I'm just like you. If something is bothering me, I'm going to feel disappointed. I'm going to have some sort of dissatisfaction. I'm going to feel a certain way. Am I angry? No, I'm probably disappointed. I'm probably upset. But you're not going to sit here and call me the angry black. And I have been called an angry black woman by someone in a leadership position. But
that's
I have to close the door.
Yeah.
I have to close the door and talk to him one-on-one. And reminded him, you know, the other day you were yelling at, you know, employees. You were slamming your door. What was that? What was that? Was that anger? What was that? Well, I was mad because bingo. You're not an angry black man. I don't understand. You started laughing because he was offended. I said, so that's what I was. What I am, what you're seeing today, I'm just angry, honey. You don't have to put a color to it. If I came in here and call him the angry Mexican dude, oh, come on, I probably would have been written up and everything else, you know? So I'm like, now, it's okay for you to say, well, Sandy, you're angry. That's fine, because guess what? Sandy was angry. But you're not going to sit here and say, Sandy's an angry black woman. You're not going to go that far.
Right.
It's okay. Me, I'm back. I'm so sorry. it's just that you have to. That's me. I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Right, but it won't allow me to hear you. So I'm sorry for the glitches with the Blog Talk Radio. Yes, I figured that was you. So let me try one more time. Okay, I have you in 3413, Dr. Harris.
Hello.
Hello. If you're speaking, I cannot hear you.
Hello.
I really would like, if you post input, it was really getting good before we started having this problem with the blog talk. I'm sorry. I know. You with the blog talk, it's blog talk, it's not me. I did everything right. It's the blog talk. It's having technical difficulties, not me. I'm going to figure it out next time. It seems like it only wants to keep people on an hour, then it starts kicking people off the show. So I'm not sure. Maybe we have to condense it to just an hour. But just what I just wanted to say was that we start to realize the increasing role of the black man in helping with overall health. Studies also show that the whole family takes on the health habits that the father takes on. So if dad is exercising, if dad is practicing good hygiene, it's likely that the entire family is practicing good hygiene, that the entire family is practicing good health. And studies don't find the same for mom. So mom could be practicing good hygiene, good health, but the kids don't recognize it as much as they recognize when dad does it. When fathers are involved in the lives of their children are not only likely to graduate from high school, but they're likely to graduate and complete college. They report being happier. They report being healthier as adults when they've had a highly involved or actively involved father in their lives. And this father doesn't even have to be in the home. It's just he's consistent. So if he's seeing them once a week or twice a week or two times a month, that he consistently, Dr. Harris, don't make me laugh. Okay, I'm trying to get through this show and finish up so we have a complete show. I'm not trying to kill you. But they find out that the child in adulthood even reports being healthier, less depression, less cases of mental illness, and they are usually more financially set up and stable when dad has been consistently and actively involved in their child's life. So part of killing this superwoman who we found out is not yet there